Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Guida, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infragistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. All right. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Pretty excited to have Justin Rupanarine. I'm so sorry if I didn't say that right, but you'll reintroduce yourself from Limitless Capital. And really looking to talk forward to talking to you about, you know, AI and some of the investment strategies you do. And really have a really cool background coming from the Air Force and SpaceX and all that. But yeah, Justin, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and we'll kick it off.
Thank you, Dean. It's great to be here. No, you got that perfectly. Justin Rupanarine.
Good.
But yeah, as for myself, I mean, I'm a partner at Limitless Capital. We're essentially a fund that focuses in the global equity space. Our team is basically just a bunch of engineers that work and occasionally solve interesting problems around risk management, alpha generation, and just pretty fun team to be around. So that's a quick story about us. You know. And as for my more or less day-to-day responsibilities right now, I mean, they kind of have three verticals: scalar operations, refining our investment thesis, and then facilitating capital introductions. That's primarily what I'm working on right now.
Yeah, excellent. So I'm kind of interested to learn about this. So Limitless Capital describes its strategy as efficient, hedged, and uncorrelated. Like, what does that mean in like plain English?
Gotcha. So just to preface, hey, this is not investment or financial, legal, tax advice of any sort. It's purely my own opinions here and kind of reflecting what we do. But yeah, I mean, our slogan, or combine those two, our slogan, right? Uncorrelated, hedged, efficient, right? You know, they sound like buzzwords, but let's dissect them, right? And to kind of dissect them, excuse me, I'm getting over. Hold, I want to step back, right? Are you familiar with what like a fund more or less does?
Sure.
Before I hop into the three? Yeah. So
yeah. And it's for our listeners too. So, but yeah. I think everyone kind of understands what a fund is.
Yeah. Let's take a quick, hey, essentially a group of investors, LPs, partners that pool money together in a vehicle. That vehicle goes out, makes investments. Hopefully those investments return capital back to the pool. They appreciate. And those capital appreciations get returned back to the investor, right? Let's get on that first topic, right? Efficient. I would argue that the fund vehicle itself is the most efficient way to grow long-term capital. It is the vehicle which has kind of built a lot of nations, businesses, et cetera, around the world. That intellectual innovation for like combining money with a bunch of other partners, LPs, investing, and bringing it back is the efficiency. And how do we do that? You know, the vehicle itself is efficient. At Limitless Capital, all right, we primarily utilize what's called derivative options, global equities, right? A mouthful. Long story short, an option is, you know, it's a way to have a varying exposure. Basically, you don't always have to say black or white. Now, let me ask you in the audience, right? If you ever invested in a stock, there's probably three ways it can go: up, down, or sideways. All right, assuming you're just buying, two of the three aren't really the best for you. At least I'd like to think, right? But the options are unique. Right, such that you're able to kind of really customize and tailor your exposure. So you're able to make positions or exposures that could profit in all three just from one position. And that's unique. So efficient in that manner. Let's move on to hedged, right? Admittedly, Limitless Capital is a hedge fund. I know the in some contexts might have a negative connotation, right? But at the end of the day, going back to what I said, a fund is just a vehicle. A hedge fund primarily, invests in equities, the markets. Technically, depending on your mandates, you can invest in quite a lot. It's the most versatile, in our opinion. Now, traditionally, when we hedge, right, going back to that exposure conversation, when you're just say long only, or you just have bought a stock, right? Are you really hedged? What if a stock crashes? Your investment might be gone. Let's take another example. You bought a house. And I think maybe a lot of people more familiar with real estate. You buy a house, maybe you rent out some rooms or you buy an apartment building. What if the market crashes? What do you do? All right. Hedging is extremely important. And it goes hand in hand with risk management. Now, all our positions more or less have a varying degree of a hedge associated with them. So we have some protection. Now, I don't want to get too deep into the investment thesis and whatnot, but that's the, I guess, the ethos behind the hedge portion. Now, uncorrelated. That one's probably the most interesting and dynamic to explain. So we're efficient because of the vehicle and kind of the securities we use. We're hedged because of the nature of how we structure our exposures. And we're uncorrelated to what we say is like the general markets, right? Maybe you've seen the news, markets are up, markets are down, real estate market is up, venture is up, or whatnot, right? By varying our exposure and kind of doing a little bit more sophisticated strategy, we like to think, we're able to make it so what's called our beta, or essentially like correlation to the market, isn't always wanted. It isn't always levered. It could be a little bit lower, higher, depending on the strategy, depending on our market thesis, what we're doing at that point. So uncorrelated, because of the particular instrument we're using, it's a lot easier to get returns that don't necessarily reflect what the market is doing. Now, I know that was a mouthful, and I felt like I talked a lot, but hopefully, those are the ethos of our funds, of our fund, and they make up what we do and the problems we solve.
So your fund focuses on what relative value, option-based strategies across equity markets. Like what opportunity did you see in the option market that made this the right strategy to build around?
Yeah, so exactly, nail on the head, right? Relative value strategy. Now, relative value, kind of long story short, there might be mispricings, right? Some things might be valued higher or lower than what one might expect, or the market determines certain things might be valued higher or lower. And we kind of take advantage of those price discrepancies, long story short. Now, to your point, like why the options market, why this certain type of instrument? Let's go back to that example, right? The stock can move one of three ways. Now, specifically with options, right? You're not just betting on something to go up. You're not just betting on something to either go down. You can make a variety of, for lack of better words, little bets for options, buys, or sells that mimic different exposures. So you can say, all right, I think this XYZ might go up in the next 6 months, but I'm not entirely sure. Maybe I'm a 50% sure. You can make it exactly that. You don't have to put in a bunch of money exact, or you don't have to invest or say, I hope it goes up. I don't know when my exit will be. You can make very specific directional and/or hedged bets or plays that reward you. And by doing that extra level of sophistication, you get rewarded from it. So that's why options, because they're the most versatile financial instrument that allows you to take varying degrees of exposure while also being hedged and even speculate if you want.
So, like a lot of investors think that options are speculative or high risk. How do you explain the difference between using options for disciplined risk management versus gambling on market direction?
Interesting point, right? Now, I'll preface this again, right? There's no right or wrong strategy, unless, of course, you've lost everything. Now, just to help me clarify, right? You're asking more or less like why to use the option rather than just to invest in something outright. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just options is associated with like high risk, and but you're using options for like discipline risk management,
Oh, okay.
and it, like how do you talk to investors that would think, okay, this is like gambling, this is high risk?
Understood, yeah. So you're right. The options, when I've spoken with a lot of just people in general, right? There's an inherent riskiness or negative connotation with it. Right. At the end of the day, it's just a tool, just like how the fund is a tool, just like how how a stock is a tool. Why people think, and to their point, maybe it is because of the leverage you can get, right? A single options contract is, so to say, it represents 100 shares, right? To buy 100 shares of, I don't know, stock XYZ, that might be quite a bit of money. But with an option, like I said, going back to the exposure discussion, you're able to put up a lot less capital up front for a bigger notational position size. Now that's risky, right? What if you're on the wrong side of that bet? You just essentially leverage yourself on
Yeah,
the wrong,
that's the
on
scary
the wrong
part.
side of something you don't want. But it all goes back to that discipline exposure. You have to understand, maybe from a just an individual point of view, maybe not institutional, how much are you exposing yourself to, right? If you, so to say, sell premium, right? You're basically making a bet. So to say, I'm going to get paid now, or let's say something doesn't go above a certain level, doesn't go below, whatever. Sure, you're putting up a small little bet, you're collecting some premium, but do you understand your exposure? Like, if that thing goes wrong, you shouldn't be placing bets if you don't know, or not bet, well, in that case, you're kind of gambling and betting, right? I would just summarize this all with options are a tool, much like any other kind of financial instrument. They allow you to get a higher degree of leverage than a lot of other instruments would. But at the end of the day, it's disciplined risk management that allows one to understand, hey, this is my exposure. This is my risk. I'm not going to take the same exact exposure I would with, like, so to say, a stock trade or whatnot. I'm going to hedge this appropriately, such that I'm covered. And it's more or less just an understanding of the way that the dynamics of the instrument work rather than it's inherently risky. It's like, did you understand what you were exposing yourself to? Did you understand, the actual dynamics of the trade? So without getting too into the minutiae,
Yeah, so does
really,
it work like, oh, if you're gonna take a risk by using options, but the position you take in, a correlating opposite position that would offset that if something goes bad, and that's how you reduce risk, or is that what you guys do?
it's a way, right? Like I said, not financial investment, legal or tax advice, but that is kind of the key of the, not even ours, but like in general, right? If you are, let's go with an example. Maybe if you were betting that something, so to say, stock XYZ is going to go up, you're just very bullish on the stock, right? You just put, a certain amount of money, your net worth into it, right? And you just wait. That's kind of the typical, what your 401k does, what your IRA, et cetera. Your risk there is, what if you're wrong? All right. It doesn't go up. It goes down sideways. Maybe it goes up, but in 20 years from now, or maybe your time horizon wasn't, what you expected. With the option, like I said, not financial or legal or tax advice, but you can put an exposure such that, I like stock, or I like XYZ. All right. I think it's going to go up. I'm just not exactly sure when. I don't know how. I don't want to put up all my capital and tie it all up into this one investment. I'm going to make a position such that, maybe at this level, XYZ drops 20%. I'm comfortable taking that. I'm comfortable taking the shares. I can place, so to say, an options trade like that. If it drops there, sure. I'm getting rewarded for putting that bet on. I'm collecting a premium, which basically means you're getting money into your account. And you're also taking shares at a level you want. Now, for the hedge, right? Oh man, what if all of a sudden I was completely wrong about XYZ? XYZ went from, so to say, 100. I was comfortable taking it at 80. Oh man, this thing dropped to like $5. It's a penny stock now. You can put an offsetting trade. Use a second option trade right under your first, where it's like, hey, if it drops to 75, I want kind of my insurance. I have the right to sell. So you've also kind of, you're basically making two kind of simultaneous bets over time, basically saying I'm comfortable taking it at, so to say, 80. I'm getting premium from making that bet, but I'm also placing another respective, so to say, hedge trade or protection that if this thing drops or becomes a penny stock, I'm protected. Sure, I'm going to lose a little bit on that spread between 80 and 75, but that's a lot of a hell better than taking buying at 80 and or the stock's at zero. Now, as opposed to going back to that stock example, hey, before, had you been holding it, right? You're just holding it long. Maybe it goes up, it drops to zero. That's your entire position. So it's just different exposures, a different way of thinking about it. It's not inherently risky. I would argue it's kind of a more, you're just able to better tailor your exposure, your risk exposure, your position exposure, et cetera.
Yeah, it's
Does that
interesting.
help?
Yeah, no, that was pretty good. So you have an engineering and mathematical finance background. How has that shaped the way you think about markets, risk, and portfolio construction?
Interesting. Correct. Yeah, my background primarily electrical engineering, undergrad, financial engineering, graduate. How has it shaped it? Well, essentially, at the end of the day, I like to think of engineering as like interesting. You want to solve problems, right? Come up with refined processes, et cetera. It's helped a lot, right? At the end of the day, portfolio management, risk management, et cetera, is a series of essentially it's a decision-making process, right? There's no absolute SOP where it's like if this goes up and this goes down, this whatever, there's no step, all right, step one, do this, but it just helps you frame it, right? It helps you make a series of, so to say, a framework around risk.
Yeah, that makes total
It's
sense.
driven by, so to say, like quantitative levels, market. You're essentially putting your decision making and risk making process on paper and you're testing, right? You could test out your exact risk process framework. That's what engineering teaches you, right? You have a hypothesis. You want to solve a problem. All right, here's your hypothesis. Go out, test, experiment, see what happens, get the empirical data. Same thing with the risk management framework and their approach to portfolios, right? We think this is a good risk management tactic. Test it on a paper trade, whatnot. It didn't go well. This is what happened. What if this happens? That's how it all applies. You're solving, so to say, the problem of how do you best manage portfolio in terms of risk and reward.
Yeah, that's interesting. So Limitless emphasizes research, analytics, and continuous refinement of its options framework, which you kind of just talked about your framework that it's not standard operating procedure, but it gives you the framework to make decisions. And but what data matters most when evaluating liquidity, risk reward in a trade? What the ups and downs, the validity, vitality, I mean, of the market, like what data matters most?
When you put it like that, it's interesting, right? Because so many things come to mind. But at the same time, just going from the overall, just, hey, what are your numbers you should look at every day? Of course, keep hitting on it, your exposure, right? What, in terms of, so to say, like delta or delta dollars, how much are you exposed? In options, we call them Greeks, just looking at those levels, interpreting what they mean for your portfolio, of course. We got to go back to the just portfolio management 101. All right, what is your, NOV, your net liquidation value? What are your margins, your initial maintenance, just the general things there, depending on your portfolio type, understanding your own portfolio's numbers. Is it healthy? Is it not? What's your exposure? And then going back to the market, right? Once you got your kind of your house in check or your fundamentals in order, what is your portfolio telling you? Sure. What are the, so to say, securities you're invested in? How are they trending over time? What does that mean to you? You know, I'm trying to steer this fine line of I don't want to, there's no
It's
true investing.
multidimensional.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot to think about. But yeah, like having a framework helps you pull all those dimensions in to kind of manage good outcomes, I guess. But it's pretty complex, it sounds like. So let me ask another different question. So you served in the Air Force and Space Force launch operations. Like, what did that environment teach you about decision making under like this uncertainty that applies directly to managing capital?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So I was a developmental engineer or 62 Echo in the Air Force station over Vandenberg, Space Force Base. So that was a really interesting time. You know, like I said, by so to say trade and education, I was always an engineer. I was like solving or thinking about complex problems and systems. The military taught me quite a bit of discipline, right? You know, there's you can imagine, right? The military is a vast array of just different people, systems, processes, all working to solve the different problems for, you know, in our case, the United States of America. My particular vein in my career was really interesting. You know, the problems we were mainly working on were how do we assure U.S. access to space, and various other software efforts. And just really learning the different people, how they interact with one another, the systems we were creating to get after the mission, and kind of documenting that all down before the heyday of all the LLMs and whatnot. It was crucial. You know, how did people truly work together? What was the most efficient? Could we write this down and actually describe what we're doing while we're doing it? How to evaluate it, both, you know, qualitatively and just, you know, do we think we're doing the right thing? You know, so that was interesting to actually think about those systems, understand discipline in that manner, and kind of see how they were applied over time.
So did you then kind of write down a decision framework? Is that what you kind of learned from the Air Force and Space Force that like to make decision making under uncertainty, let's kind of put down a decision framework and then you can apply that to managing the capital? Or I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm
No, yeah. As far as what happened at Limitless Capital was kind of like a, those were the building blocks. The key takeaways from the military career was kind of building these decision-making frameworks, not just toward, well, at that time, not towards, so to say, managing capital, but just in general, right? How do you make this, so to say, decision-making framework that hopes to make this process more efficient, better, you know, get the results you want? Actually recording every little thing down. Are we getting efficient? Are we getting faster? And the key is, you know, the requirements aren't always clear, right? You have to create these decision-making frameworks under ambiguous environments and requirements. So when you don't actually know what target you're trying to hit, but you have a good idea of what direction you want to go, that's the key, right? How do you make this framework where it's like variable enough to keep kind of adjusting? You don't know what you want to get towards necessarily, but you have an idea of the right direction under these ambiguous environments, operating procedures. How do you do that? That's what I think the key takeaway from my Air Force career was, kind of
Yeah, that's
building that out
awesome.
and learning from it over time.
Yeah, because I run a tech company for the last 37 years, and I have to do that with uncertainty when tech changes. Like we've been through a lot of tech iterations, but like in the beginning, there's just a lot of uncertainty and ambiguity. But directionally, you kind of have to keep moving because you can't stop. But then, as you learn more information, you make different decisions and. I just kind of reflect on what you said there. That like that's a good learned skill to have. I learned it over many years running a tech company, but that was cool that you learned that skill at in the Air Force and Space Force.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you another question. Like in launch operations, you can't ignore the small signals because they become major risks. But investing, what are your early warning signals that you watch before a trade or a strategy needs to be adjusted?
Right. Yeah, I mean, just speaking from my own like personal point of view, not legal or tax. It's just now, luckily now these trading systems, of course, you should have, so to say, a written kind of investment thesis and a risk management framework. I think everyone, regardless of level, should kind of have that for their own portfolio. The basic questions, what is your time horizon? What kind of returns are you looking to make? How much risk, so to say, willing to take on, and kind of answer those and kind of build your investment thesis and framework around that. I think everyone should have that. And depending on what you kind of write out there, this is what your signal should be. So taking it just from the top, right? Say you are, I don't know, you just, maybe your kids are in college now, you're kind of just looking to maybe retire soon. Do you want to be taking a bunch of risk at this time? I don't know. I mean, maybe you want capital preservation. So in that case, your important metric should be maybe your nest egg, so to say, your retirement fund. All right, that should be my number one, preserving this capital. So then that kind of determines this is the kind of risk profile I want. This is the time horizon I'm dealing with. I want to retire in maybe 10, 15 years. I'm not going to put anything into a super early stage startup. I mean, maybe it will depend on your thesis, but that really determines what you're going to invest in and the risk reward profile. Another example, right? Say you've just started off, right? Maybe you're a pretty high income earner in the tech space, down in 20 to 30 or whatnot. You have time, you're pretty familiar with, so to say, tech companies, the newest and up and coming technology, what might trend, what might not. You have room to take more risk, so to say. You want to become, so to say, have a legacy in the future, or maybe make your own company, but you don't have all the capital yet. So maybe you could maybe, go about this two ways. Save up your nest egg, build out your company, or depending on your profile, maybe make some investments at the more early stage startups. Now, I feel like I'm talking around your question,
Yeah,
but
because like,
all that, yeah.
can I interrupt you a little? Because like, what are the early warning signals you watch for? Like,
When
so
your
that's that what
thesis
you just
goes
talked
wrong.
about is more of a like risk tolerance and time frame when you need capital and but like, what are early warning signals you watch for before a trade or you adjust your strategy?
So I'll talk about in general because I don't want to get into the specifics of the fund itself and any perception of offering investment advice or whatnot, or fund strategies. But I mean, it kind of hits on the nail on the head there, right? Depending on your investment thesis, you're going to know your numbers. And it's kind of similar based on the personal level all the way up to an institution. If your margins, if you have a margin threshold and you see your positions, their value all of a sudden is decreasing and you don't understand the reason why, that should be a big glaring red flag, right? Why your position's decreasing, or how close are you to your margins? If you see your NLV, going back to that portfolio example with someone who wants to retire, if you see your portfolio shrinking, why is that happening? Why is mine like these should be big glaring red flags. Now look at your investments, look at your thesis, your risk framework. It should tell you where to look. Why to look there? What's going wrong? And then you can easily address it. So it's usually, there's not some hidden, at least to my knowledge, not some hidden little metric or number that, institutions look at. It's going to be those big glaring red flags that should be obvious. That's where you're looking first.
Okay.
Does that help or make
Yeah,
sense?
that
Or
definitely
okay.
helps. And yeah, it comes back to the framework of decision making, that input when you first started talking about between time frame to cap use of capital or ex and risk tolerance. And but yeah, no, that answers it. Now, limitless, you list transparency, integrity, collaboration as core values, but like everyone just kind of like cares about performance. Like that's what gets attention, but how do those values affect the operating system of your firm?
All right, so I mean, here at the end of the day, we're relatively newer, right? And when you just read off those core values, admittedly, right, they sound a little bit, so to say, I mean, I'll be honest here, they sound a little bit generic, right?
Yeah.
But they're the core, like, hey, this is what you should do. If you're placing money with a fund or any investment for that matter, it should be transparent, collaborative, or whatnot. Now, how do we do that is how we want to more or less set it apart, right? Especially with the smaller team we currently have right now. How do we set ourselves apart and actually offer transparency into, our potential LPs? And we've utilized AI to quite a significant extent to help facilitate that, where it's like, if you were an LP invested in, so to say, maybe a larger institution, do you know where your capital is right now invested? Is it in like home A or maybe startup company B or what happened with it? Sure, you're going to get performance. And to your point, yeah, I mean, if you see a number that says, all right, you got, I don't know, 3, 4, 5x, I mean, I'm sure you don't really care what your thing is, but not everyone wants, they're 10x. Some people want capital preservation. But going back to the original point, what we can do now with transparency, especially with the advent of not advent, but just greater integration with AIs and respective technologies, including LLMs now, is truly offer a much more granular view for LPs. Where exactly is their capital going? Why is it going there? What is the risk of this investment? And very granular at the time, right? Hey, this is where your investment is, so to say, right now. And not just for Limitless, for any kind of fund or similar investment firm for that matter. This is where your capital is. This is where the risk is. This is how the risk develops day over day. And now it's a lot easier to get these reports, of course, reviewed by legal counsel and the respective other partners and entities back to LPs. It's like, you understand, hey, this is how my investment's trending. This is my exposure right now. This is, the time horizon, so I can actually see you had an LP that wanted, I want a 10x return in 2 years. They can kind of see how that's trending. I mean, honestly, depending on how granular you want to get day by day, if you really want to
Yeah, that's
get
good.
down to that level. Does that help? Yeah.
Yeah, that helps a lot.
Yeah.
So looking forward, like how do you think AI and better market data and automation will change option trading and asset management?
I
You
mean,
talk a little bit about it, like you have like really good reporting and transparency of trending of and risk. You already talked a little about that, but what else can you share?
in general, of how it would more or less change the market, so to say, or change
Yeah, like
strategies.
from your perspective, how do you think AI, data automation is going to train change option trading and asset management?
Right. So, interestingly enough, I mean, with a lot of these, with option trading in particular and kind of other derivatives, there's really a lot of good data out there, down to, I don't know, micro, down to quite significant precision. So how it would change, right? The key is there's so much data. In
Yeah,
fact,
good
there
point.
at sometimes you could argue there might be too much. You get analysis paralysis, but AI, I mean, inherently the new LLMs that have just kind of recently taken everything, they allow you to just better interpret data, right? It imp helps significantly improve your judgment, right? It doesn't replace accountability, but I'm able to quickly understand a lot of numerical data a lot more quickly, see where it's trending just from, utilizing one of these LLM tools. Now you can still do that even before LLMs, just like, running it through a script or whatnot, but it just helps bring that deeper layer of, so to say, insights, better judgment, greater sophistication. Now, I know I kept it kind of broad, but long story short, helping you make more sense out of your data, even more so than before.
Yeah, great. And was there a question you wish I would have asked you?
AI inherently, you see a lot of these businesses, right, where they say, AI is a strategy and whatnot. AI inherently isn't a strategy itself, right? It's more or less leverage on your existing strategy. You got to
Yeah,
have those like
100%.
decision-making frameworks, risk management frameworks, et cetera, all in place. So I think that's a key there, how to address that. I mean, for lack of better words, having your and really knowing your strategy. And then also kind of the risks, right? We always talk about everything great that AI has done, especially in this space, but it's introduced new risks that we're still just trying to navigate through inherently, right? course, you have your kind of, red flags, your data privacy risk, modeling. Are you modeling the right thing? Is it doing the math correctly? Over-reliance, right? People always say, I can replace X, Y, and Z now with this LLM tool. But now are you over-reliant, so to say? I mean, did you just cut an entire department and replace the NA, but now you're just over-reliant on the LLM itself? I mean, of course, the usual is hallucination, reputational. Would you ever use AI to talk with a client? A lot of people have it writing emails, But at the end of the day, if it's writing from your inbox, do you really want to be communicating false statements or whatnot with the client? There's so many risks that AI has introduced that I still think we're trying to fully flesh out what's the best practice of SOP and decision-making framework, for
I
lack of better
agree.
words.
No,
And
you're 100%.
I mean, if you have the answers, let me know. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the question I want answered. What's
I mean,
it going to look like,
there
right?
are processes to, but everything you said is right on. But yeah, every day they get better, but that's where you have like, yeah, human in the loop that, based on risk of exposure, whether it's a relationship or, legal, or like you guys have to be financially compliant. And so, yeah, it's like how over time, once you build up trust in the workflow or the agent or the AI, you can let it go more autonomous. But some things you'll never let go autonomous. And so it's based on the use case. And but there is this huge assumption of hyped of the capabilities that it's really a coworker. It's a good name, Claude and others use Microsoft, but it's they've what I'm happy that now they've kind of reframed the narrative. It's working along teams instead of replacing teams. So I think that's like the narrative for now. That's the right narrative. And we'll all know, like for all of us that are working with it every day, like the hype, but everyone else reading the headlines, they just believe AI can just replace workforces. It's just not true. So I agree everything what you said.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, interesting times for navigating.
Yeah, but it's amazing what you can do. And then like a lot of us that are building the tooling and the workflows and the harnesses to leverage LLM, like you're trying to glue in all the data and context, and you're also trying to put guardrails because it's a probabilistic thing and trying to create more deterministic outcomes. And but then as they get better, then you have to start you remove the guardrails. So it's like this ever evolving process.
All right.
But no, but it's good for people to hear what you said. It's because of just kind of settling down this macro view of what unfortunately a lot of big tech companies were saying, and now are starting to change their narrative, which is good.
Yes, I
Yeah.
completely agree.
Yeah. Well, Justin, appreciate you coming on. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so if you want to just reach out, ask any questions about anything you heard today, LinkedIn's the best way, right? I mean, it's just honestly my full name, Justin Rupnarine. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks for sharing. Yeah, hedge funds, option trading, it's quite complex. And so thanks for kind of demystifying some of that. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Dean. Look forward to another one.
Yeah, great. Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida. And Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.